Hey, from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerds, a show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
And I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
Happy New Year's, John Trumbull.
Happy New Year, Darren Patterson.
How are you, good sir?
Well, I survived to 2021, so I guess I'm not doing too badly.
Same here. We made it through 2021, and already it's better than the last year.
It's shaping up to be an interesting year in any event.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. I mean, we're all still indoor.
Yeah. I mean, we're recording this 3 days into the new year, so.
So far, so good. We're cautiously optimistic so far. We're tiptoeing into this new year, hoping not to, fall over any tripwire or something like that.
Exactly. Fingers crossed.
How'd you ring in the new year? I guess just at home watching Dick Clark's Rockin' Eve or something?
I don't really have a go-to New Year's show anymore. I was mostly on Fox because they had Joe McHale and Ken Jeong on. Mm. And I was like, oh, well, I'm a Community fan. That might be fun. It wasn't all that good of a show. And it was a lot of plugging of the Fox shows that look horrible, like The Masked Dancer, I think it is.
Matt? That's a real wait. You're not joking. That's a real thing.
That is a real thing. It's like The Masked Singer, but with dancing.
All right.
I think Ken Jeong is going to be a host for that as well.
All right. So it's not just a clever title. It is The Masked Dancer.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I think so.
All right.
and then I flipped and I watched a little bit of Anderson Cooper and. What's his face from
Andy
Cohen.
Cohen. I almost said Klein.
I watched a little of them on CNN. And, and they're kind of entertaining.
Yeah, I actually heard that Sherry O'Terry made an appearance as Barbara Walters on that.
I saw a story about that and I didn't click on it. I was like, okay, well, that's nice for her. She's working.
All right. Yeah, she's out here doing it. She's out collecting a paycheck. That's good.
What about you? I'm assuming you went to some big shindig, some big super spreader event.
Oh, absolutely. The wife and I were putting on the Ritz, top hat and tails. We went out to the finest ballroom in all of New Jersey. No, we didn't do any of that. We stayed home in our pajamas, watched the ball drop, drank some sparkling cider, and were asleep by 12:30.
Okay, I get it. You own pajamas. Wow.
Yeah. I don't mean to brag, but I got some nice pajama pants. You know.
Yeah.
I'm doing well. This podcast is very lucrative. You know.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I haven't got any of that sweet, sweet pajama money yet, but maybe if the stimulus check comes in soon.
That's right. You'll have $600 worth of pajamas just lying around the house. I mean,
that's the dream. That's the dream.
That's the American dream. That's what my parents moved here for.
Exactly.
One day we will give our child $600 worth of pajama pants. Someday. By God.
I think that's in the Constitution.
Yeah, towards the bottom, but it's in there.
Yeah. It's it's right after the bits where they tell Nicolas Cage where the treasure is hidden, and then.
If history has taught me anything, and by history I mean movies, that's all correct.
Yes. So,
I'm going to steal the Declaration of Independence.
I rewatched all those Get in the Cage bits recently on YouTube. I was just in the mood to see them. And it's really funny because, like, Andy Samberg, I believe he moved the Nicolas Cage hairline up a little further each time he did that.
Yeah, there was one point where, like, his hairline was almost on the top of his head.
Yeah.
It was bizarre, and I don't know. I guess Nicolas Cage is one of those actors who knows how he comes across, so he kind of plays into the caricature of himself, kind of like Christopher Walken kind of knows. I don't want to say he's like a total caricature or a cartoon of himself, but like he knows how he can come across sometimes and like how people do that impression of him, so he, instead of kind of rebuking it, he kind of leans into it and enjoys it.
Well, I mean, he actually appeared on one of those, so yeah, I think he must have seen the humor of it, or at least saw the advantage of making it look like he got the joke.
Right. It's not like when Andy Samberg was Mark Wahlberg talking to animals, that whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, even that was kind of fun when they brought the real Mark Wahlberg on.
See, I heard that, like, Mark Wahlberg really wasn't crazy about it. And I think he only did it because, like, maybe his agent told him it'd be a good look. But I think he was, like, really, like, mad, or, like, he was going to punch out
Andy Samberg. I could see that happening.
Yeah, he was like, hey, if I see Andy Samberg, I'm gonna give him a punch in the nose.
I mean, but, you know, maybe he has more of a sense of humor now. He does the movies with the Will Ferrell.
Yeah, and the Talking Bear. You're probably right.
Yeah, so.
All right, maybe. Mark Wahlberg, call in. Let us know what you think.
Yeah. We're curious, Mark Wahlberg. What makes you tick?
Yeah, Mark Wahlberg, what you all about, Wally?
Just sit down. We just want to know what's inside of you.
Yeah, come on, let us know there, Max Payne. What's going on inside your cranium?
So, should we talk about what we're doing this week on the show?
Yes. So this week on the show, we're talking about an awesome TV show because SNL is still off this week. We've heard that it might come back on the 30th, or it's supposed to come back on the 30th, but, like, they haven't confirmed it yet. But, you know, word on the street,
it's
coming back on the 30th. But until then, we're going to talk about one of my favorite TV shows that's been out for the past 2 years, Barry with Bill Hader. And this came out in March 25th in 2018 on HBO.
Yeah, so, I mean, a relatively recent show. This is a show I heard about but hadn't had the opportunity to watch. I didn't have, haven't had HBO for the longest time, but I signed up for the HBO Max last week so we could do the Wonder Woman 84. And I was like, hey, why don't we do Barry? Barry's on there. I can watch Barry. You can go through it a second time. I'll be watching it the first time, and we'll talk all about the two seasons of Barry.
Yeah, and I was happy to do so because I really enjoy this show. So this show is created by Bill Hader and Alec Berg. And for those of you who don't know who Alec Berg is, you kind of should, because he's kind of a big deal. He wrote on Seinfeld, a little show called Seinfeld, and is the co-creator of Barry. He also co-wrote, I think it's an EP also, on Curb Your Enthusiasm, Larry David's show. And he also was an EP on Silicon Valley. So He's a kind of a big deal in the comedy world.
Okay, yeah, I don't think I was real familiar with Alec Berg by name, so this was kind of a pleasant discovery.
Right. Yeah. So from what I've read, how this show came about is Bill and Alec had the same agent, and I think the agent was like, "Hey, you know, maybe you guys can get together and create a show." Because I think Bill had signed a deal with HBO or something, and they kind of came up with this idea. About like we'll get into it in a bit, but like so basically the premise is Bill Hader is this hitman named Barry Berkman, and he's a hitman in Cleveland from Cleveland, and he's just doing these little hits, and he feels like very kind of empty inside from it. But the thing is, he's really good at this may sound weird, but he's really good at killing people. He's a really skilled hitman, and but he just doesn't feel fulfilled inside. And I think Bill Hader said he kind of came across this way to frame it because during his time on SNL, he had some really bad anxiety. Like, I think he said in a few interviews where he's like, yeah, before I'd have to go on, like, I would be super nervous and I would, like, really tense up sometimes. But after I got it done, I was okay. But before it was really bad. Like, sometimes we get so nervous. I had like flu-like symptoms. I got like sick. And so from that, he was thinking, well, like, but the thing is though, like a lot of people tell him he's really good. We all know him as this really skilled, comedic actor. So he was thinking, well, what would happen if like somebody was really good at something, but it was kind of killing them inside, which is how the show Barry starts off.
And it's really striking. I mean, even just like the opening shot of the first episode, you just see Barry walking out of the bathroom in a motel room, and the camera just pans over, and then you see this dead body on the bed, and that's how the show starts. And in the early episodes in particular, you see that Barry is really like severely depressed. And I thought that the depiction of depression on the show, I thought they were really getting it right. I mean, just the way you can just feel sort of numb and you can just go to, sort of go through the motions of life. But he's just walking through his life like a zombie. You see him just like standing in the shower and he just has no emotion in his face. He's just checked out mentally, man.
Right. Yeah. I mean, when I first heard about this premise, in my mind, I immediately thought, oh, is this kind of sounds like, you know, the John Cusack movie, Gross Point Blank. Mm-hmm. And it is a little bit like that, but it's a lot darker. I know a lot of this movie gets kind of put into the comedy category because, you know, it's Bill Hader. And like, I thought it'd be kind of like a little bit more lighthearted than it is. But no, there is some comedic elements in this show, but for the most part, it's like a straight up drama. And there are times where
it does get very funny at times, and it did make me laugh out loud a few times. But yeah, it's straight more often than not, and it gets intense and it gets very violent.
It's like a straight up action movie at times.
Yeah, and it gets very dark at times. Yeah,
yeah, very much so. So
I mean, at times it reminded me of the Breaking Bad or Better Call Saul or even Dexter.
Yes, yes.
Absolutely. I mean, I definitely saw some crossover in those shows. I mean, maybe it was reminding me of Breaking Bad just because it has like lots of people getting murdered in the desert.
But, yeah, that's true too.
You know, and it also reminded me of Dexter because like you also see like him sort of waking up from his life what his life has become. And he's like kind of learning how to feel again and learn how to feel empathy again. But we're kind of burying the lead. He like, The Barry character, he goes out to L.A. for a hit job. He has to follow this actor who's been sleeping with this Chechenian mobster's wife. And Barry, the hitman, follows this fellow. It was Rob, right?
Ryan.
Ryan. He follows Ryan to this acting class. And he ends up, like, being impressed with the class. And he gets a dream of becoming an actor and he joins the class.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. So, Barry, he has like a handler with him too. His name is Fuchs, Monroe Fuchs, played by the great Stephen Root. And, I mean, Stephen Root's like phenomenal in this series. Like
I don't think I've ever seen Stephen Root in anything that I've disliked him in. I can't think of a bad Stephen Root performance or
no, it doesn't exist.
I mean, we sung his praises on our Office Space episode and I have fond memories of him from News Radio, especially. That's still the show I most associate him with, but I mean, he's great in just most anything.
Right. And, this character Fuchs he is Barry's handler. He's the one that tells him that gives him jobs, tell him where to go, tell him, the hit. He sets up everything, but he's also sort of a father figure and basically Barry's only friend because he's the only one that he's the only person that Barry can talk to about these things. Later on in the series, they say that he hooked up with Barry and Fuchs hooked up because Fuchs was a friend of his dad's.
Yeah,
and he put him in this path to be a hitman because we also learned that Barry was as ex-military. He was in the Marines. And when he came out of the Marines, he was like severely depressed. And, you know, he met up with Fuchs and Fuchs gave him purpose. And that purpose was to be a hitman.
Okay. Yeah. And as the show goes on, we learn more and more about Barry's experiences in the military, especially in the second season. They really get into what happened to him when he was overseas. And, you know, just why he is the way he is. And, it's something else, man. And wouldn't necessarily think that Bill Hader would be somebody you would find credible as a Marine or as a hitman, but he really pulls it off. I would say in the competition between Taron Killam and Bill Hader being the more convincing hitman, I'm going to have to give it to Bill Hader.
Yeah, that's true. Bill Hader could have been in Killing Gunther. Absolutely. Yeah. Because it's like we said, like, I mean, we all know Bill Hader is like kind of a lovable, kind of goofy, fun, charming guy who does all these great voices and, you know, he's really talented. But then we watch him in this, and I see a whole different side of him. There are some scenes in here where he's downright menacing. Like he is unrecognizably unrecognizable and just straight up terrifying, like scary. Like, it's really interesting. It's really incredible that he was able to kind of go to that place and sort of transform himself. And you see him in this different light. It was really.
Yeah. Cool. And he won an Emmy for this role in the first season. And I think deservedly so.
Yeah, I believe he won two, didn't he?
Yeah. You know what? I think he did.
Yes, he did. He won two Emmys from this.
So two seasons, two Emmys. Undefeated.
That's right. Undefeated. Bill Hader.
And speaking of Emmys, we should mention another notable actor in this series, Henry Winkler, who plays the teacher of the acting class that Barry begins to go to.
Yes, yes. Henry Winkler of, you know, Happy Days fame, plays Gene Cousineau, who's the teacher of this little black box theater that Barry goes to, that, you know, he follows the guy he's supposed to kill to it. And, I mean, Gene Cousineau is a really interesting character, too, because, I mean, later on in the show, we get to see he's, like, kind of an actor who's been around forever, hasn't really had his big hit yet. He probably will never get his big break.
I mean, we see him in one episode. We see him, he's going on like this cattle call audition, and he's reading for a part of, like, you know, Man in Line. And he's like, okay, well, I have two ways to do this. And he's like, okay, we're waiting. And, you know, he puts another spin on the line. So he's going out for these nothing parts. And then you see him go to the class, and he goes to the class, and he's getting a standing ovation just for walking in, because his students, who are all like fairly young people, they just worship the ground he walks on.
Exactly. He's basically, I mean, people say, I mean, he might be kind of like a Del Close, you know, type of person. Mm-hmm. But he's sort of a person who hasn't made much of himself in the real world, but in this little black box theater, like, he is the king. So, yeah. And all the students are like, they look up to him. So that's where he kind of reigns supreme.
Yeah, yeah. I think I read somewhere that the pitch for the show was like, what if a hitman, or like, what if Travis Bickle from Taxi Driver or Will Mooney from Unforgiven met the characters from Waiting for Guffman? Which, that's a hell of an elevator pitch, and you can definitely see that. So just the contrast between those two worlds is very interesting and very funny at times.
Yeah, yeah, very good. Because like a lot of the actors in this class, that you can tell they're not very good at this.
No, no, or they, you know, and they're not as good as they think they are.
Right.
And this is something I found incredible. Henry Winkler, he won an Emmy for the first season, and this was his first Emmy win, which that just boggles my mind. How did Henry Winkler never win an Emmy for you know, back in his Fonzie days?
I don't know. I guess, well, maybe it's because, like, back in his Fonzie days, people just saw him as, like, oh, that's like a teen heartthrob thing. That's just, like, you know, they didn't take him. He's not a serious actor. He's, like, on the cover of Tiger Beat or whatever.
Okay, I'm on his Wikipedia page now. He got three Emmy nominations for Outstanding Lead Actor.
All right.
A comedy series, maybe, you know, I don't know who is winning. He's probably up against Alan Alda for at least a few of those. Mm. He won two Golden Globes, but never an Emmy. But I mean, he's Henry Winkler. He's so good, and he in the last, you know, decade or two has really had a great career resurgence with, like, Arrested Development. You see him pop up in the Adam Sandler movies. He's been on Children's Hospital, and it's really nice to see him getting the appreciation he's due, you know?
Absolutely. He's always like, I mean, people say he's like the nicest dude in Hollywood. I met him once. I probably mentioned on this thing before, but yeah, I met him that one time and he was like super, super nice. So like, he's aces in my book, kid.
Yeah. Yeah. He's cool. Thumbs up to Henry Winkler.
Ay. Correctamundo.
Yes.
All right, so a lot of the actors in this class aren't very good. One of the actors, though, the only actor who seems to have it, who has, like, really, you know, some acting chops, is this one actress, Sally Reed, played by Sarah Goldberg, who is not hasn't done too much television and film. I read some interviews with her, and she's like, yeah, she kind of comes from a theater background. Mm-hmm. So, like, she's sort of a newbie to the show. And, yeah, I mean, her character is really interesting, too. And, you know, of course, she forms a sort of a relationship or a bond with Barry, and there's, like, an attraction there. And the way they write her character is interesting because she likes Barry, but she also has sort of a tunnel vision for acting, and she really wants to make it. So, mm-hmm. I mean, she is a nice person, but, like, you can see there are times where she can be kind of narcissistic and, you know, and also, like, she also can be a little not insecure at times. And, you know, she has her issues, but she's, like, genuinely a good person, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And they and she and Barry form a bond very quickly. They become, like, scene partners. And it before long turns into, like, a romantic thing. But there are, of course, complications there. And, of course, Barry can't let her into his full life. I mean, she has no idea what he does for a living. But, the joke is that all struggling actors have day jobs, and Barry's is just a little more different than most.
Right, exactly. And, of course, he tells Fuchs this, saying, I found this really cool acting thing, and, like, I was up there, and I felt really good. I think this is, like, my purpose. I really want to do this. And, of course, Fuchs doesn't want to hear it because, you know, he says, like, no, you're a killer. This is what you do. This is all you do, you know. And, I mean, in his defense, he does make some good points. You can't be a hitman and, you know, an actor, because being a hitman, you have to be in the shadows. You have to be solely mm-hmm. secretive. You know, you can't be in the spotlight. And being an actor, you're literally in the spotlight. Like, you got to be on Facebook and you have to be there meeting people. Like, those two worlds can't mix, because, like, if you become a bigger and better and more seen actor, then as a hitman, you're going to, you know, you're more in the public eye. So you might get killed. So we see, like, Barry trying to justify juggling both those worlds, which I think is interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I mean, it is. And, you know, that's kind of what the series is about, is, like, just Barry realizing how incompatible these two lives are. And he wants to get out of the hitman business and just pursue the acting thing full time. But, of course, there are always complications that come up where he can't fully get out of it. And like, one life is constantly screwing up the other. Barry has this relationship with Sally, and Sally convinces him, well, you need a Facebook profile, because if you're going to be an actor, people need to be able to find you. And so he makes a Facebook profile under his new acting alias, which is Barry Block, right?
Yes, Barry Block.
Barry Block. And through that, he befriends all the people in his acting class, and he ends up befriending one of his old Marine buddies, and this Marine buddy comes over to a party that one of his somebody in his acting class is throwing, and he brings another couple of Marines, and that just creates a situation that just escalates throughout the first season.
Yeah, this once this series gets going, it escalates quite a bit.
Yeah, yeah.
But actually, we should get back to the. We should get back to the Chechens, because the Chechen mob who hired him to do this hit, basically they want him to kill Ryan, because Ryan, like you said, Ryan was sleeping with the boss's wife.
Yeah.
So we meet the head of the Chechen mob, Goran, who they're actually just got there in L.A. The show takes place in L.A. And they're trying to sort of build their stranglehold in the L.A. scene.
Yeah, they're just like young hungry mobsters. They're trying to establish themselves.
Yeah, in they're like a startup business.
Yeah, exactly. Or like the young struggling actors in Barry's class.
Exactly, it's the same thing. Same mm-hmm. thing. So so we see Goran, and we see his number two man, NoHo Hank, played by Anthony Cardigan.
This guy is so funny, man. He's probably the most consistently funny character, because he is just this mobster wannabe, but he is so wonderfully clueless. And I mean, Yeah, he's just great. I mean, some of the humor surrounding him is very dark because he's in the Chechenian mafia, but
yeah,
but very funny.
I think they had this cool idea to make him a mobster, but make him like really nice and super polite.
Yes.
So it's funny because he's always like, "Oh, hey man, how's it going?
You're
gonna carry this hit out for me? That's cool. Great."
He is the friendliest possible mobster. Like he's texting Barry about hits, and he's like sending emojis and bit strips and.
Yeah, there was one point where he like texts the guy's like driver's license and address, saying, "Yeah, you know, tell us when he's killed." And then the next text is, "Please delete all this information after you killed."
Yeah. So he's very clueless, but
but yeah, and he's really good too. The actor Anthony Carrigan, he's really fun. He hasn't done too much comedy in the way of comedy because I actually looked into another interview he did. And they were saying because the actor in real life has alopecia, so he's totally bald, and he has like a very, you know, he doesn't have much in the way of like eyebrows and eyelashes. Like,
yeah. I was wondering if he'd like shave them from the part, if that was makeup, but I had no idea. Okay, so
yeah,
him a very distinctive look though.
Yeah, and like from what like in the interview they said, well, yeah, because I look a certain way. You know, I get cast as villains a lot. He was actually in two episodes of The Flash, and he was been on The Blacklist and Gotham. And so he kind of gets, you know, what you call it? He kind of gets, you know, typecast in the villain role quite a bit. He was in the TV show The Forgotten for a bit. And he gets, so like as him doing comedy, this is like kind of new for him. And He's pretty much a natural. Like the way, like his reactions to things are hilarious. Like his facial expressions are hilarious. Like he's really good in comedy.
Yeah. So like Barry, like he gets sucked into this acting class, and he ends up actually kind of hitting it off with Ryan, the fellow he's there to actually hit, and he ends up driving Ryan home when Ryan's had a little too much to drink after the first class. And they're like hugging in the car. And at this point, Barry doesn't know that the Chechenians are following him to make sure that the hit goes off without a hitch. And
I see what you did there.
And they're pissed off when it looks like Barry's just like letting the guy go. And so they decide to shoot him themselves. And then, you know, Barry, who's still in the area, he retaliates against them, and it's just this whole can of worms being opened, you know?
Right, because Barry and Ryan bonded over, they did a scene from True Romance, because there was one line that Barry said when he was talking to Fuchs about it, saying, "Oh yeah, it's LA theater, so all the scenes they do are from movies."
Yeah, that was a nice conceit that they had in the first season. They kind of lost that in the second season, which I thought it was too bad because that was an amusing thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's hard to get the rights for it or whatever, but
I don't know. Maybe they just thought the joke got old or something. I don't know.
But that feels right. That feels like a very LA thing. Like, I've only been to LA once, but I do feel like, yeah, they probably only do like movies and whatnot.
Well, I mean, I know in LA there is a theater scene, but it's not, you know, it's nothing like it is for, because all the emphasis of that, the city's industry is on movies and TV. So, yeah, theater is ironically kind of looked down on in LA.
Right. Yeah, no, I think that's one of the reasons that they also wanted to do that, because LA theater, and I don't want to say it's like a joke, but it is, you know, like you said, it is looked down upon, and I'm sure there's some humor in that. So I think that's why Alec and Bill want to focus in on that and have that be the thing that Barry wants to do other than be a hitman. Because like you said, because like Barry's, he's a really good killer. He's a really skilled, but he doesn't want to do it because he's killing him. So he wants to do something like acting, which he's not very good at. So I think that's the thing that Bill and Alec thought was really interesting when they created the show, where they're saying, well, what do you leave the thing that you're really, really good at, even though it's killing you inside, to go for this other thing that your heart is telling you that you want to do, even though you're not really good at it? Which is an interesting dichotomy.
Yeah. That's an interesting character conflict. And you see it sort of play out over the course of the second season. And then, you know, over the course of the first season, that is, and then it sort of escalates over the course of the second season, because we're getting kind of the fallout of how the first season ended.
Right, because, I mean, as you said, like, the Chetniens killed, well, spoiler, I guess, but Chetniens killed Ryan, and they were still there, and then they were going to kill Barry because he didn't kill Ryan. The Chetniens' gun jammed up, and Barry got the drop on him and shot them all dead and just kind of ran off. But unbeknownst to Barry, one of the Chetniens left their lipstick camera on the dashboard and saw the whole thing. So guess what? Now the cops are involved.
And they get a lot of humor out of the cops have to spend like several days or even I think weeks probably trying to get the footage out of this lipstick cam because it's like password protected. And one of the cops stupidly is just like putting in just random.
Oh yeah. Random numbers.
Random numbers. And that locks it up. And it just makes the job all the harder to extract the information from the lipstick cam. And then when they finally get the footage, all they have is just like this blurry black and white image. And they can't really make out, who shot the Chechnyans. And they have like printouts of this, but there are no features on the person's face. And they're asking the acting class, cause it's Ryan's acting class. And so they're following up every possible lead. And Henry Winkler's character just goes, okay, so you're looking for a man with no features. And everybody in the class is like, well, why can't you just, you know, zoom and enhance it like they do on Law and Order or on every TV show? And the homicide cop is just like, that's not a thing.
I didn't know that either. But apparently, yeah, that whole zoom enhance, that is not a thing. Like Law and Order has misled tons of people into thinking that was a thing. And then,
a thing that like every TV show does. And it's fine on something like, you know, Star Trek, if you're doing like a science fiction show, but so many cop shows in the present day, it's like, oh, well, we got a reflection off this hubcap that's then reflected into a store mirror, and we can zoom in on that and enhance it. But, you know, when you blow up a pixelated image, it's just making the pixels larger. You don't get a higher resolution just by zooming in.
Yeah, you know, as you're saying it, it makes sense now. So, yeah, now I feel like a fool.
Yeah, you know, it's like if you zoom in on something that's 72 DPI, it doesn't suddenly become like 300, 400 DPI.
Whoa, what's with all the fancy tech talk there, Mr. Wizard?
Well, hey, I get, you know, the BFA in graphic design's got to come out sometime.
La-di-da, you know your BFIs or whatever you just said?
DPI, it's dots per inch.
Ah, that's far too fancy a talk for me to understand.
Okay. Well, we'll move on.
And we also should mention in the very first episode, we get a SNL cameo. We get Melissa Villaseñor pops up at the very
Was a surprise. That was interesting.
Yeah. Like she's in there. It's only like a couple lines, but I'm still like, hey, Melissa, all right.
Yeah. It was nice. You know, I'm assuming he knew her through SNL, so it was nice of him to like throw her a bone. And Bill Hader had some other interesting connections to people in the show. Like, what, you know, one of the other people in his acting class is what's her name? Darcy Carden.
Yes, Darcy Carden from The Good Place.
Yeah. And like I like kind of vaguely recognized her. It wasn't until I saw her name. I was like, oh yes, okay, I know who that is. And she used to work as a nanny for Bill Hader.
That's right. She's to take care of Bill's daughters. That's so crazy. Yeah.
That's so cool though.
It is. It's like oh, how about look at that? Friends helping friends.
Mm-hmm.
I do declare. Yeah, it was really nice.
I mean, I wonder if that's like Bill Hader's way of kind of paying it forward, because like you know how he got on SNL, right? Megan Mullally saw him in perform with his improv troupe or something at like I think like somebody's backyard party or something, and she was like, "This guy's really good. I'm going to recommend him to Lorne Michaels," and he got an audition for SNL out of that.
What?
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Yeah, nuts, right?
Yeah, Megan Mullally just changed that dude's life.
Yeah, yeah.
Megan Mullally, please listen to this podcast and change our lives. You know, pass this on to Earwolf or something. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. But I just love that story just because, like, it makes Megan Mullally sound so cool. And it's just, I mean, that's, you know, that's a Hollywood dream right there, man.
Yeah, that's like, you're like being anointed by Hollywood royalty there.
Yeah. So, Bill Hader, before that, he was working as like a PA on various shows. And
yes, that I knew. Like, I think I forget. I think there was like some TV show where he talked about he was working on like a Steven Seagal film as a PA or something like that. And they kind of trashed it, which, you know, Steven Seagal, so that's fine. And but yeah, he told me he didn't tell me personally, but from what I heard in interviews, like, he was kind of ready to be like one of those post-production guys, just like kind of work in the editing room.
Yeah.
And he was just kind of doing the comedy stuff on the side. And Megan saw him and changed his
work. On his Wikipedia page, it says just before he was officially invited to begin work on SNL, Hader was working as an assistant editor on Iron Chef America.
Wow.
That's quite a career transition there, you know?
Yeah, so quite a bit. It's like, hey, guys, I'm not going to edit this Iron Chef. I'm going to go be a star.
Yeah.
Toodaloo.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, but this is the first time you've seen this whole season, right? This, you've seen Barry. So,
yes, like, yeah. I mean, this is the first I'd seen of any of the shows. I'd maybe seen the odd clip on a talk show or something like that, but okay. Not that I can recall.
Okay, well, what were your first impressions of the first season? It's like, you know, what do you think of the characters, the storyline?
Well, I mean, I really enjoyed the first season in particular. I thought, I mean, like I said earlier, I was really impressed with how they were depicting Barry's depression. And you can even see it in how he dresses. He's like just got this very bland clothing. He wears like a lot of gray, and it's buttoned up to the top button, his shirts, and they're like freshly ironed. He looks very, very nondescript. And then at one point when he goes to a party, he's trying to fit in, or he's trying to fit in with the acting crowd. And he buys this whole new outfit, and they're like, oh, hey, Barry, you look good. And he's like, yeah, the outfit was on the mannequin. Yeah. And he's wearing the exact outfit. And he even has like the satchel that the mannequin was wearing. And he never takes it off because that's what the mannequin was wearing.
Yeah, the little messenger bag. That was hilarious. And then I think that's the episode where he brings Sally a laptop because he noticed like her laptop was broken, so he gave her a laptop as a gift. And Sally was like, "What? A laptop? That's weird. Why are you giving me a laptop? That's like way too much money."
Yeah, yeah. And this is something, you know, at this point they've just like hooked up once. They've spent one night together, and so they were saying, like, you know, Barry, who has a very sort of junior high understanding of how relationships work, he's like, oh, we're boyfriend, girlfriend now then. So.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's the thing with this series is that Barry's kind of, I mean, I don't want to say he might be a sociopath. I think they're still trying to figure that out, but like, he's like somebody who's just trying to get back in touch with his emotions a little bit, but you know, because to become a killer, you kind of have to be detached and, you know, kind of have no soul. And I think he's trying to be done with that. And he's trying to learn how to, I guess, be a real person. So like, we're kind of, we kind of see that as the show goes on.
Yeah. And that, you know, that was where the show reminded me of Dexter a little bit, because like, you see a little of that happening in the, Dexter was on Showtime, I think, which is, you know, a show about a serial killer who just decides to, you know, I have this compulsion to be a serial killer, so I'm only going to kill other serial killers, you know, and just use this for good. But he like falls in love over the course of the series, and you see him like sort of his soul kind of waking up, you know. And I felt a little of that was happening with Barry.
Yeah, there's definitely a little bit of that. I mean, also it may have to do with the way it's shot. The way it's shot is very kind of like cinematic and whatnot. I went to see who directed most of these episodes. Most of them were directed by either Bill Hader himself or Alec Berg. There's a few other episodes that were directed by other people. One episode was directed by Maggie Carey, who is directed the To Do List with Aubrey Plaza, who's also Bill Hader's ex-wife now. And then a couple episodes were directed by Hiro Murai, who I whose work I really enjoy. He directed like a couple episodes of Atlanta. He directed the now famous This Is America video by Childish Gambino. And like he has a really cool like eye and a cool like sense of like style.
Yeah, it's a really good looking show. I mean, it's lit. I mean, it's very cinematic. It looks like a movie. I mean, it looks like they spent some serious coin on it. And yeah, Bill Hader does direct a fair amount of the episodes and is, I mean, it's, I guess it's some of his technical PA and editing background coming to the fore there. But yeah, it's really impressive.
Yeah, yeah, he's really good. And of course, as we said, like Stephen Root, who plays Monroe Fuchs, he's a really interesting character too, because he is, it's like we said, he is like a father figure to Barry. He does care about Barry, but at the same time, he's like a very slick talking type of dude. Like he's very fat. He's like, he has a way of kind of, you know, I don't want to say like a con man, but he's very good with his words and he can like really kind of talk people into doing things and whatnot. He's, if I had to compare it to anybody, I would say like maybe like Loki from the MCU, where he's like a type of person who's very good with talking and very good with his words. And he's always looking for an angle. He's always looking for a way to get what he needs out of the situation and basically survive too. Like he'll say and do whatever it takes to, you know, survive to the next day. He's like one of those type of people, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I think, you know, it's really interesting, like seeing Barry's empathy kind of reawaken. Like there, like out the acting class is very shaken after Ryan's murder. And they decide to do like a benefit performance for him. And I think they say something like, all the proceeds for this are going to end violence. And they don't name a charity or anything. It's just, that's how vague it is. Like it's going to fight against violence.
Yeah. You hear the audience people go like, what?
Yeah. And, but, he sees Ryan's father, who's obviously very broken up about the death of his son. And Barry's very shaken by that because, like up until this point, he's always made a point of killing bad people, you know, people who I guess you could argue deserved what was coming to them. But, you know, Ryan, the only mistake he made was like sleeping with the wrong woman. So but he seems to be a good-hearted guy and Barry seems to really struggle with that.
Right. Like, I think at this point, like Barry's starting to see the repercussions of his actions. He's there to see like the aftermath of like him. Cause like he just killed, usually he's just used to killing somebody and just on his way. But now he's starting to see, oh no, there's people in this person's life that loved and cared for this person that I took away. You know, I took that person away from them and made their lives terrible. There's, you know,
And also like his, Gene, the acting teacher played by Henry Winkler, is trying to like unlock Barry's emotions so that he can tap into this stuff so he can become a better actor, because Barry is not a good actor when he starts. I mean, he's interested in acting, but he is just so stiff and so restrained that he is just not good.
Right, because he has no connections to his emotions and, you know, he doesn't even know if he has emotions at some point. So he's trying to find them or trying to untap them. Or he's trying, you know, trying to unleash them. And like, I don't know, the first season I thought was really interesting. I mean,
yeah, the first season, it builds beautifully. I mean, and it's a pretty efficient series too. I mean, they've only had two seasons, eight episodes apiece, and the individual episodes are just a half hour. So, I mean, I just marathon the whole series and, you know, it takes like 8 hours total. So,
yeah, we don't want to give away too much because we really want everybody to watch it. But yeah, like the first, I mean, how can I explain it? It's like we said, it's not a straight up comedy. It's more like a drama, action drama with some really funny comedic moments in it.
Yeah, yeah.
I would say. Like there's,
and it's just, but you know, and the And the interesting thing is, like, all the hitman mob stuff, they don't glamorize that. They don't play it up as goofy the way a lot of other projects would. They just present it very matter-of-factly, and that makes it, like, all the more horrifying.
Right. It's like, I think it's like you said, like, the way Barry was dressed. He's dressed like very ordinary, drab, gray clothes. Mm-hmm. They really wanted to make a point to do that and kind of steer away from it. Because I think when they first pitched the idea of him being a hitman, you have the idea of, like, a John Wick type, like, you know, a black suit, white shirt, skinny tie, you know, just like stylish types of shooting.
Very Reservoir Dogs or something. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And they were like, no, we want to steer clear away from that as possible. We just wanted to have, like, regular drab clothes, and we want to make the violence very real. I think Bill Hader even said he made a conscious effort to take out jokes in certain parts where it didn't really call for a joke. Like, there would be some scenes here and there where I think people would be like, well, this is kind of dark. Maybe we should put in some jokes here to lighten it up or to make it a little bit more wacky or whatnot. And Bill was like, no, that's not what the scene is calling for. I mean, it's murder. We can't make murder super wacky. That'd just be, murder is gritty, grimy shit. So, like, he made a point of that to make it more, like, just, you know, more dirty and rugged like that.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, and that I think is the right way to go. I mean, because, like, you know, real violence, it's sudden and it's unexpected and it's horrifying. You know, if you've ever seen, I don't know, like a car crash or God forbid, you know, that you've seen someone die violently, it's, you know, that shit fucks you up, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, fortunately, I've never, you know, seen that. Yeah. Knock on wood, but yeah, I can imagine that shit can't be fun. Like, but I really enjoyed, like, the first season. Like, I like how they tie in the cops in with the acting class. You know, the head detective is Janet Moss, and she sparks a relationship with Gene Cousineau. And like, there's a lot of things at play throughout the series that I really enjoy.
Yeah, yeah, and it's interesting because she's a homicide detective and she's investigating his class, it's a massive conflict of interest, and she knows how wrong it is, but she's still just very drawn to Gene. And they eventually, against all odds, they start a relationship, because, like, you see Gene, like, sort of hitting on her, and she's at first she's just like, what the hell are you doing? And she's not having any of it, but he wins her over, oddly enough.
Yeah, and that's another thing I enjoyed about this series is none of the characters are, like, one-dimensional. Like, you see somebody like Henry Winkler's character, Gene, you think, oh, he's, like, the goof, the lovable lout who's kind of vain and full of himself as an actor, even though he's never made it. It's very easy to write him, like, that one-dimensional character, but they don't. Like when he, like you said, when he hits on Janice Moss, I think, oh, that's just going to be one of those things where, you know, she rebuffs him and he keeps going after her.
I thought this is the goofy subplot for this episode, but no, I mean, they weave that thread throughout the first series. And
And
even the cop work isn't glamorized the way it is on most other TV shows. Like the precinct that the cops work out of, it looks like any other office. They've got, like, cubicles. And, you know, it's not like the typical TV cop station where, you know, there are just desks all over and there's all sorts of paperwork. It looks like any sort of office. You could have, like, a telemarketing firm on that set and it wouldn't look especially different.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it doesn't look like where the Bad Boys, like, work out. You know, the Will Smith, Martin Lawrence, you know, police precinct in, like, Miami. Like, I thought, because, you know, it's in L.A., I thought it would be like some nice looking, you know, glass ceiling, big old retro fancy.
The big Beverly Hills Cop police station.
Yeah. You know, yeah, fancy times. But it ain't. It's just like some drab ass shit, like, from The Office.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't even look as good as The Office on The Office.
Wow. Yeah. You know, that's very true. But yeah, like, I mean, the first season, I thought, really knocked it out the park. I mean, it shows. Yeah. Like, really what Bill Hader can do, and kind of took him out of, you know, maybe the box people may have put him in, or myself.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really unexpected sort of project for an SNL alum, because it is, you know, probably more drama than comedy at this point. And it's so not what you expect somebody like Bill Hader to do. But, well, thank God he did, because it's really, really good. And I was really impressed with the first season in particular, just because I thought it all tied together beautifully. It tells a pretty complete story. And it's got some really surprising twists and turns to it.
Yeah, I mean, we won't give too much. But yeah, but the final episode, I remember when I first saw it, I was like, how is this going to play out?
Yeah.
And then we went into the second season. And I would say the second season, I think it's better than the first.
I preferred the first season more. I thought the second season, while it was still very good, it meanders a bit more. There's a subplot between Gene and his estranged son. We discover that Gene has a son that he basically abandoned when he was a kid, and they've never really had much of a relationship. I didn't really quite see how that plotline related to the others, and it didn't really connect with the others much. So it just seemed like, we need something new for Henry Winkler to do this season. Let's give him an estranged son.
All right.
That's how it felt to me.
All right.
Because like after they introduced the character in the first couple episodes of season two, they didn't just drop him for several episodes while the other plot lines are taking prominence. And so it was just like, well, what was that whole thing about?
I could see that. I mean, I can sort of see why they introduced him, because, you know, something happens at the end of the first season that like causes
it,
him.
It changes the function of Gene's character on the show. And he doesn't have he could very easily not have as much to do as he did in the first season. So I see why they brought in the son thing, but I just didn't feel like it was integrated enough into the show, you know?
Right. No, that makes sense. I see what you're saying. But I mean, for the most part, I don't know. I thought it was interesting with the season two is like they get more into Barry's character, like we said, like more about who he is. They talk about his first kill in the Marines. That was a
great episode. Some flashback to that. The acting class, they decide on a project to draw from their own lives, and Barry tells the story about his first kill when he's in Afghanistan. And then as he's telling the story, a couple of people in the class get up on stage and start acting it out. And because none of them have been in the military and it's not a world they know about, they're acting it out in a much more cliched way. And Barry tells the story about how he spots this person like 700 yards away, and he gets the go to fire at this person, and he makes the kill incredibly. And the people in his acting class, they act out him being all horrified by it and traumatized by it. And then we see the real flashback, and all of his fellow soldiers are like, "Hell yeah, you did it, bro." And they're like, they're really jacked that he just killed this guy. So you see how Barry got so warped by that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's another
thing. But Barry doesn't reveal that to the acting class. Like Gene, after they acted out, Gene is like, "Oh, is this how it was for you?" And Barry's like, "Yeah, that was it."
Right. And I mean, that's kind of an ongoing thread that goes throughout this season, where like people kind of want to rewrite history or rewrite their memories in a more favorable light. And, you know, because like people say they want truth and they want honesty, but they don't want the truth. They want the truth that they're more comfortable with. And we see that in
Like Sally is developing her own piece about how she was in an abusive relationship, and you kind of gradually realize that her memories of how that ended, she's really just rewritten that whole thing in her head, where she's like the hero of her own story.
Yeah, very much so.
And she kind of finds out when she's comparing her recollections with a friend, she's like, "Oh, well, remember how I stood up to my abusive," was it her boyfriend or her husband? I'm forgetting.
Husband. She got married like right after high school.
Okay. So she's telling the story of like, you know, "Oh, you'll never get the chance to hit me again," and, you know, choke on this. And she has a great exit line. And it's, you know, the sort of thing you'd see on a billion other TV shows. And her friend is like, no, that didn't happen that way at all. We actually just snuck out in the middle of the night while he was sleeping, while he was passed out drunk.
Yeah. And like, I also liked because she's talking to her friend who she hadn't seen in a while. And her friend's not like a mom. And yeah. Her friend is like, oh, yeah, you know, we've seen you. I saw you in that Alien movie. You were great. And then Sally says, oh, well, did you see me in this other thing? Had a bigger part. It was like a lot more meatier and a lot more meaningful. And yeah. She's like, oh, no, I'm a mom now. I don't have time for movies like that, you know, except for Kardashians and, you know, This Is Us.
And, Real Housewives, et cetera.
Yeah,
and she's listing all this basically trash TV.
Yeah.
And it's like a long list of shows.
And it's just like, funny because, like, yeah, she has time to watch all these shows, but she doesn't have time to watch the thing her friend is in. As a comedian, that hit me in a special place.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I can't come to your show. I got to watch a British Bake Off.
That's true. Oh, yeah. Oh, I once had – I remember I once sent, like, an email a blast out about a stand-up show I was doing, and it happened to be on the same night as the Tonys. And a friend of mine actually responded. He was like, oh, you're inviting people to a comedy show on the night of the Tonys and you expect them to show up? And what he was just like, treating it as laughable. And I was like, and I called him out on it. I was like, dude, you're being a real dick to me here. You know?
Yeah. That's a real jerky thing to say.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he meant it in a joking way, but you read that in cold print and it's just, yeah. It's just like, don't treat the idea of coming to my show as totally laughable, please.
Yeah. It's like, I know you're up there following your dream and, you know, trying to make it as a comedian. But, I mean, Neil Patrick Harris is going to dance on TV. So I...
Yeah. And I was like, you know, you can record shows now. You can watch them later.
Yeah.
And you can go out and support a friend. And maybe... You know, if you did that, or even if you were just silent and did not respond to this email, I would not be pissed off at you now.
Yeah. Why don't you just do that? Why do you have to let him know that the Tonys takes precedence over your thing? Like, you don't need to know that.
That's basically going out of your way to be a dick.
Wow. Well, nerds to you, John's friend. Up your nose with the rubber hose.
We are not as close as we once were.
Oh, boy. Wow. Bridge burned.
Yeah, more or less.
All right. Well, whatever. His loss.
Yeah. I mean, no, just you mentioning that just triggered that memory for me.
Oh, sorry. I didn't mean to.
But you know what? I mean, like the Barry show says, I'm probably rewriting that a bit in my head to make myself more heroic or articulate. Than what I actually was. I'm sure I'm mixing in some things I wish I'd said. And if I like went back and actually looked at those emails, I'd probably be like, oh, well, that's what I actually said. Oh, that's weird. Okay. I didn't remember it that way.
Let's go with your story. Let's go with the Braveheart type version.
Yeah, sure. Sure. Exactly.
Choke on this.
But I really liked the character development that Sally got in the second season. And just that, like, she's starting to gain some success as an actress in that she's booking work, but it's all of the unfulfilling, you know, oh, Mr. Johnson, these people are here to see you now. We actually see her reel of her acting work that's been cut together by her agents. And it's just comically bad because her parts are all just so minuscule.
Right. Yeah. They're all like you said, like secretary and like small stuff like that. And part of me was kind of worried a little bit about how they were writing Sally's character. Cause like, I really like Sally's character cause she is very complex and like, she's not 100% likable sometimes. Cause like, you know, she's so focused on making it and being an artist and an actress. Like she will say some things that are like kind of mean or, you know, a little hurtful to people or like very.
Yeah. She can be inconsiderate cause she is so focused on the acting.
Yeah. And I always worry about that because like, I just know like a lot of people, you know, especially women, in a film or TV or just in general, like likability is a big thing. Like I still remember one of my favorite shows, Breaking Bad. Like people were giving Skyler guff because, you know, like when she found out that Walter was a drug dealer, she was not too pleased about it, and people were all like, "Oh, why is Skyler giving Walter all this heartache? Because he's trying to make money for his family."
Right. Yeah. And you know, it's also interesting. Like you just really realize at times, like the big double standard that can exist between men and women or male and female characters. Like people were just like hating Skyler for. Spoiler for Breaking Bad, I guess, for cheating on Walt at one point. And they conveniently forget that, like, Walt tried to cheat on Skyler in retaliation and was, like, rejected. Walter White did far worse things than cheat on a spouse in that show.
Yeah, Walter had people murdered. Like, straight up murdered. And people were all like, "Oh, that's cool. He's trying to make money for his kids."
Yeah. Like, yeah.
And it's like, oh, God, people are gross.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember one time like seeing the movie Spider-Man 3. At one point, like I've seen it with an opening night crowd and people were like really hating on Mary Jane. And like at one point, like when she. I think she kisses Harry Osborn at some point in the movie. And like, I remember somebody in the theater just cries out whore when she did that.
Oh God.
And that's like after Peter as Spider-Man, like kisses Gwen Stacy with their like special upside down kiss.
Oh.
And I remember the audience that night, they also cheered when like Peter under the influence of the evil Spidey suit, symbiote thing. He knocks MJ down. And like some people in the audience cheered because like her character was so disliked by that point. Wow. And I was like, hey, yeah, there's a definite double standard going on here. Yeah,
that's some incel shit.
Yeah, I know. I was just like, this is something else here, guys.
Yeah. That's sad. I mean, the fact that, you know, you saw Spider-Man 3 is sad. It's all sad.
The story gets sadder. I actually saw it twice in one night.
Oh, John.
I saw it like with one group of friends, and I think I had plans to see it with another group of friends. And I kind of was like, after the first showing of it, I think I was kind of fooling myself. I was like, yeah, this was pretty good. This was all right. I'm not going to mind seeing this again.
Oh, dear.
That movie has problems, you guys.
Yeah, you don't say. It's like, oh yeah, no, this is fine. I'm sure Lucy will hold the football this time as I running try to kick it.
Oh, you know, he didn't mean it. He still loves me.
God damn. Yeah, I mean, I saw it too, and I can't say shit. I saw it in the theater too in IMAX because, like, you know, we really want to do it up.
But yeah,
it just took me one time to be like.
Because I like our expectations for that movie, they were pretty high because Spider-Man 2 was so good.
Yeah, yeah, 1 and 2 were good. So yeah. I don't know. We don't know how 3 went so horribly wrong. Holy moly!
Oh, well, you know, I have theories, but
wow! Oh, tweet at him, people. Let him. He will happily share.
I mean, it's pretty common knowledge. People know what's wrong with Spider-Man 3. I don't think I'm ripping the lid off of any unknown information here.
That's right. We need the Raimi cut. Is that what you're trying to say? We need to.
We really don't. No, we really don't.
We need to make this longer. It needs to be on HBO Max. Need to be 4 1-hour episodes of Spider-Man 3. Is that what you're saying right now?
No. No, I am not.
I thought.
Okay. I will go on record. I don't really need more of Spider-Man 3.
Okay. Well, all right. Then that's that then.
Sorry. Sorry, all you Spider-Man 3 fans.
There's like two of them. You're fine.
Yeah, okay. Come at me, Spider-Man 3 fans.
What were we talking about?
Supposedly Barry.
Oh, right, Barry. Season 2, like I said, I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed that they brought in other mobs to interact with the Chechen mob. Because I won't get too much into it, but there's also the Bolivian mob. Headed up by this guy, Cristobal, who's also super nice. There's this thing that they do where they make all the mob guys, all the mob bosses, like super nice, positive, almost like Tony Robbins like characters.
They're very friendly mobsters. Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
And Barry just keeps getting sucked into this world. He keeps, you know, it's like Michael in The Godfather 3, like just when I think I'm out, they pull me back in, you know, right. And there's always something that just keeps drawing Barry back into this world against his will, against his better judgment, because it's, you know, usually it's like he's being forced or blackmailed in some way. You know, it's like, well, if you don't do this thing, then, you know, I'm going to expose you for this. And and they play that note a lot, but they find a different way to do it each time. And it is very good writing.
Yeah. And also, I mean, NoHo Hank, he had the bigger part in, I think, in the second season. You see him more. And he's a hilarious dude. I don't know why he hasn't done comedy more often. Actually, according to IMDb, Bill Hader said that NoHo Hank was originally meant to die in the pilot. Like when
I read that, yes.
Like when Barry shoots at the car and he's supposed to get capped, but they just found him so funny they decided to keep him. You know, much like Jesse Pinkman.
Yeah, good call. Good call in both instances. Mm-hmm. There's also a standout episode in season two.
Ronnie Lilly.
Yes, exactly the one, which is basically just about a hit going bad. Like Barry goes to hit this guy in like the suburban neighborhood, and the guy turns out to be like a taekwondo expert. And so like there's a lot of them just fighting back and forth, and Barry thinks he's finally gotten the guy, and then the guy's daughter comes home and she's like a taekwondo expert, and she's like running around like a freaking ninja.
Yeah, that is one of the most insane episodes. It was almost like Coen Brothers like. It is so off the wall what happens. And here's some little trivia. So the fifth episode, that Ronnie Lilly, stemmed from two ideas Bill Hader had. One about following Barry on a botched hit in real time. Right. One that he got from stunt coordinator Wade Allen. Allen told Hader while they were filming season one that he knew a little girl who was a daughter of two stunt performers that he could get in contact with her if they ever had a use for her. And so Hader combined those two ideas into this Ronnie Lilly episode, which is definitely the standout episode, or one of the standout episodes of season two, because it's just
I think absolutely, and it happens like right around the middle of the season, and the stunt work is just in freaking incredible in that, and the stunt coordinators are very, very good at their jobs,
right? And I mean, season two has some amazing things. Like we said, like NoHo Hank was amazing. And again, Steven Root, like, cause Steven Root's character, I've said this before where he's very like conniving, but he's also kind of like a goofy dude. But at the same time, you know, not to turn your back on him. Like he may appear kind of goofy and he's very disheveled.
I think it's fair to say, I don't think it's really spoiling anything if we say that Fuchs and Barry are on the outs for most of the season. They are
right.
You know, because Barry wants to quit the business and Fuchs, of course, is just like, no, you can't do that. This is our meal ticket. This is what you do. This is who you are. This is what you're good at.
Right. And I mean, in season two, especially he cranks up like the, I mean, he's not straight up evil, but he gets really closer. There's like he's like kind of like a menacing force behind him, like with the things he does and says to really, you know, throw a monkey wrench into Barry's life. Like I don't know, I thought Steven Root did some amazing acting in this
he season. Really did. I mean, my opinion of Steven Root was like sky high to begin with, but I mean it's even higher if that were possible.
Wow. Sky higher.
Yeah, sky higher, yes.
And again, we won't say how it ends, but it ends on a note where you're like, wow, how is this going to end out? How is this going
to
continue?
I mean, it's like we keep coming back to Breaking Bad, but it's like one of those Breaking Bad episodes where it's like, where like, you know, the when Hank Schrader is on the toilet and he finds that book.
Yes.
If you watch Breaking Bad, you know the scene I'm talking about. And it's a scene where it's like, oh, this thing finally fell into place. This changes the whole world of the show, and where is it going to go from here? Season two ends on that sort of note.
Yeah, it's really, I don't know. I can't say enough good things about the show. I'm really glad you got a chance to watch it. So you like the first season better than the second one, just because of that meandering stuff?
I felt like the first season was like a tighter story. The second season, they're going off in a few different directions, but there are things I love in the second season too. I love the whole subplot of Barry and Sally both trying to find their truth in the pieces that they're writing for their acting classes and the different conclusions they come to in that. I thought that was just wonderful. I mean, you know, there's a lot of great stuff. I just thought that season two was like a notch below season one, personally.
Okay. No, fair enough. I do also enjoy that, you know, while they also talk about, you know, the world of hitmen and killing, they also have some commentary to say about the showbiz and the world of, you know, people trying to break it in, trying to make it and auditions and whatnot. There's like some good, there's some good stuff in there about that. I mean, I don't think, well, there's one part, I guess, it's not a super spoiler, I guess. There's one part where, Sally gets a new agent and they put her, they say, hey, we're going to set you up an interview with this big TV producer, not interview, but like a meeting with this big TV producer. And like, we're going to, you know, have you bounce ideas off each other. And it's a big deal to her. She's like super happy. And Barry is in the lobby waiting for her because she's her ride. And then one of the agents who she just had a meeting with sees Barry and says, hey, oh, you're Sally's friend, right? How tall are you? And just from that, he gets an audition for a Jay Roach film.
Right. And Jay Roach, if you don't know who he is, he's the guy who directed the Austin Powers movies. So he's a big time guy. And we also had a cameo from Allison Jones, the great casting director, who we've given a shout out to on this show. She was she's cast most every big comedy of the last 10-20 years, and she cast a Stupid and Futile Gesture.
That's right. It all comes full circle. It's a beautiful thing. But yeah, so that happened. So basically, that's a funny thing that they put in where Sally Ree has been like working for years, working her ass off, trying to get somewhere in this industry. And she finally gets like this meeting with a big TV producer, and Bill Hader gets an audition just because he's tall and he's like the right height for the movie.
Yeah. And Barry is so naive about the business. He doesn't even realize that this isn't how it typically works. They said in one of the behind the scenes things after each episode, you know, he's just like, oh, this is how it works. If you hang around long enough, you just get automatically asked to audition for a Jay Roach movie.
That's how showbiz works. Just hang out in the lobby.
Yeah. Yeah.
They'll put you in some.
You know, if Megan Mullally can discover you at a backyard improv show, I mean, anything's possible, right?
Anything is possible. But yeah, if you're somebody who's been in the acting world, in the theater world, I mean, you have been in the theater world. So, I mean, I imagine it's like there were some kind of tropes put in there that kind of rang true to you that you were like, oh, yeah.
I mean, actors can certainly be pretentious and kind of up their own hindquarters, you know?
It's the nice way of saying it.
And you see them like, you know, doing the mirroring exercises and things like that. And Barry is just like, how does this make us a better actor?
it loosens you up for the stage.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I really like this second season. There's a good amount of comedy in it and a good amount of like darkness and seriousness in it too. We see like Barry kind of really trying to figure out who he is. He's trying to figure out, am I evil? Am I a bad person? Can people change? Am I just this sociopathic, you know, killing machine who's only good at killing? Is that all I do? Or is there more to me? It gets very kind of, you know, philosophical and whatnot.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it goes places.
Yeah. Yeah, it does. It does. I mean, when this show comes back, I will definitely be checking it out. Apparently, it has been renewed for a third and I think maybe a fourth season as well. But the shooting on the third season was delayed because of COVID. They were due to start shooting it last April in 2020. And of course, everything shut down. They shut down after table readings for the first two episodes. So I'm assuming the season is all written by this point, but they just need to find the time and the ability to shoot it safely.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I tried to look up to see if there were, you know, if they had a date yet for when they're going to shoot the new season. I couldn't find anything. I just heard it's on, you know, TBA, as it were. So, I mean, hopefully they can.
Oh, TBA. Oh, I hear good things about that channel.
Oh, it's very good. It's very prestigious. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I have a meeting with the producer for tomorrow.
Oh, well, okay.
So, I mean, hopefully they can start shooting the third season soon. And I mean, just because that, again, I don't want to give it away, but the cliffhanger they left it on, my God.
It's going to be really interesting to see where things go from there. I mean, because the meat of the show is when the hitman world and the acting world kind of run up against each other, and they figured out a really interesting way to do that. And yeah, no real going back from that, from where they left it.
Oh, not at all. No. So overall, Barry, you like, you know, like, what do you think?
Liked. Thumbs up. Thumbs. I'll give it a Fonzie. Yes, two thumbs up. Hey.
All right. Sit on it, Cunningham.
Yeah, I mean, I was expecting it to be good because it's one of those shows that's so critically praised. You're like, oh, well, this must be good. And I like Bill Hader as a performer. Very unexpected role for him, but he knocks it out of the park, man. And you got Stephen Root and Henry Winkler, and, you know, we discovered what is the lead actress's name? I'm
Sarah Goldberg.
Yeah, Sarah Goldberg. I mean, I didn't know her before, but she's great. She's really good.
Yeah, Anthony Carrigan, comedy gold, apparently. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a strong premise, some strong dialogue, some strong direction, strong acting. Mm-hmm. Everything about this show is pretty damn strong. I really can't think of
very surprising plot twists. I mean, you think you know where the show is going at certain times. And a couple times I did guess where it was going. I was like, oh, well, they're doing this. And they did do that. But other times I'm like, oh, I wonder what they're doing. And they go somewhere I was not expecting. So,
yeah, I mean, for the most part, this show is like just all muscle, no fat. It is like from top to bottom. It is aces, kid.
Yep. Yep. Highly recommended. And it's streaming on HBO Max now.
Yeah, yeah, you can watch it on HBO Max, or if you have HBO on demand, give it a watch. It was on Hulu for a bit, but then I think HBO Max came on, and they were like, yeah, we'll take that back. Yoink. But yeah, guys, we can't recommend it enough. Barry.
Oh, HBO. I'm so glad that sentence ended with enough.
What? Oh.
That'd be a very different sentence without that last word.
It would be weird that we've been speaking his praises for over an hour, and at the very end, we say,
I mean, if you want, it's okay.
I was looking at my phone through half of it, so I don't know. So we put up on Twitter that we were talking about Barry. We got a few things from people. At Nick Store saying he really likes Hader in all he does. However, Anthony Carrigan as NoHo is a comedic gem and really adds to the show.
Oh. Yep.
And I like I like how he just introduced himself as NoHo Hank, and no one really asks, like, where do you get the nickname NoHo from? It's just North Hollywood Hank, and, like, that's...
Yeah.
Just what they call him. There's no explanation for it. But yeah, that's our episode, guys. Go watch Barry. It lives up to the hype. I will say that.
Yeah, yeah. Did not disappoint. So, our friends at the Decomposition Podcast asked, will we ever see new episodes of the show? Is it tied with Better Call Saul for best show currently airing on TV? Trick question. It's not on TV. It's on HBO.
Oh,
you got served.
Damn, son. I got plenty.
And I'm assuming they did a little dance-off moonwalk thing right after they typed this.
Type, send, moonwalk.
Yeah.
I could see that. High-fiving himself.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how you celebrate.
Exactly.
Oh, boy. All right. Yeah. So that's our episode. Guys, thanks for listening again to the our little podcast here. Hope you guys enjoyed it. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at SNL Nerds Show.
Mm-hmm.
And you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Darren Credible. That's D-A-R-I-N Credible.
And you can follow me on the Twitter and the Instagram at Trumbull Comic. That's T-R-U-M-B-U-L-L and the word comic.
Indeed. So, all right. So, yeah,
that's how that works.
Wow. That's how that works?
That's how that works.
Huh.
So,
I had no idea.
And if you have suggestions on what you would like us to watch next, something SNL related, we define that as just starring or connected to somebody who has been involved with Saturday Night Live at some point in its long and myriad history. So, yeah, we're always looking to discover new stuff on this show. So please let us know what you'd like to hear us cover.
Absolutely. I mean, we got a couple of weeks until the new episodes of SNL start. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, throw us some ideas. Let us know what you would like to hear us babble on about. A documentary, a TV show, a series, or a movie, a puppet show, you know, whatever.
Backyard improv show.
Yeah, exactly. A backyard improv show, a rooftop show. Zoom mm-hmm. show. As long as it's SNL related, we'll consider it.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. So, all right. So that is it. We'll be back next week with something else SNL related. We'll figure it out. The tweet out in the meantime. But until then, nerds out.
This has been a non-productive media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.